I am unashamed. What about you?
So, see, I'm checking my phone here, and you say, what are you doing? I had this pretty good discussion with my lovely wife because I was texting myself, and she thought I was being egotistical. You don't do that, Al?
No, I don't text myself. It's like, I don't talk to myself either.
She said, why don't you put it in notes? And I said,
well, why would you text yourself if you already had the information?
I didn't want to forget the information. Oh, so I texted myself.
So it's a briefing, a memory.
So Dad, yeah. you and I write stuff. We're old enough. We still write stuff down. That's the way we remember stuff. Jace is just doing it new age.
I do it. I text myself.
Well,
do you?
Yeah, Zach. Zach's with you.
So, do you sing a little song? When I think of you, I text.
I don't know.
Jace, have you ever texted yourself and been offended by the text because you said something too harshly?
That's why I didn't mean that egotistically. I just like texting myself because I'm unoffendable.
Well, sometimes you give yourself an update. Whether just in your mind or if you text yourself, but 3 weeks later, you come to a moment and you say, that's the craziest thing I've ever thought about. Sometimes, it works against you. You say, I don't know what I was thinking when I wrote that down, when I sent that text.
Well, this is the funny part. So I'm into the Olympics and I was texting myself to check on the date. Because every time the Olympics came on, I kept thinking, how did I miss this? Because they had 2020. Everything I see is 2020. And so I asked Missy, I was like, is it not 2021? And she said, it's 2021. I said, well, why do they keep saying this is the 2020 Olympics? She said, well, they moved it because of the coronavirus. So I was like, well, why don't they say it's the 2021 Olympics?
So, coronavirus or no?
So I sent myself a text to research that, and I figured out they had spent almost $2 billion on marketing. So they decided they were marketing for the last 5 years that the Olympics was going to be in 2020 because it was in 2016.
So I'm just asking, what motivates you to be – I'm into the Olympics. I'm into them. What do you mean?
Oh, I watch it. I watch the games. I'm a competitor. I love our country. We're representing. We're seeing who's the best in the world. That's probably my competitive streak.
I take it, Dad, you haven't seen any of the Olympics so far?
That's a good conclusion, a good deduction there.
And you know what I like is I've watched a few hours of it in the wee hours. And there's not been, no political banner. We're playing a game. I'm trying to beat you. I represent America.
Nobody's kneeling to false gods.
Not that I've seen. It's just been competition. Now, they have some new events, which were kind of interesting. I thought the 3-on-3 women's basketball was the most exciting women's basketball I've ever watched. It's 3-on-3. There's one half of a court. You hit it just like we played out in the yard for years.
Oh yeah, half court.
You make
basketball.
It. You miss it. You take it behind the line. Then you can shoot it. The whole game lasts seemed like it lasts maybe 20, 30 minutes. it was awesome, and we won. We won that little game I watched.
I don't know how much time I would set aside to delve into that particular.
Well, you're missing out. Last night they had the big showdown.
I missed out on a lot more than that, I'll tell you that.
This swimmer, Ledecky, who won like 4 gold medals in 2016, she has a rival, and it's some Australian woman, and they like showed the backstory, and this Australian woman's coach was like the most emotional person. I mean, he's hollering, and because he's like, we must beat this girl, he was like musing.
And you're on the edge of your chair watching.
Well, by the time they talked about it and got me all swept up in the emotions of it all, when the actual race happened, like halfway through the race, it's those two and then everybody else is They're not even in the race.
I will give you this. If you're going to watch anything that has no lewdness or filthiness or carnal, who can run the fastest, throw stuff the furthest?
Yeah, it's
jump highest. You know, you got a point. I would call that good, clean watching.
Yeah. So, you know, in the history of the Olympics, one time I looked up like events that we had, like, because some events I don't get, you know, they got the curling now. You basically throw a big stone down and you try to
position it. It's kind of like shuffleboard. It's like icy shuffleboard is what I compared it to. Remember we used to play shuffleboard, Jason?
I kind of like that.
By the way,
I mean, I do it, but they're like sweeping the place, you know, sweep. You got sweepers and pushers.
The whole thing is to get the surface.
Yeah, by the way, Al, philosophically at least, what drives human beings worldwide to compete with each other to see who's the best? What is that about mankind? Because you know, back in the games, they call it, you know, the Bible speaks of the games. You know what I'm saying? So the Greeks and the Romans were real big into what Jace is talking about. It was a little more brutal, let's face it, back 2,000 years ago. What drives human beings to do those, to be involved in that? So what's the deal there?
You know, you're right. It's very ancient. And I'd read somewhere that the original Greek Olympic Games were nude. They were nude when they competed. So that would add another element to the whole proceedings.
Oh, they got America. If they find that out, you got that coming next.
Ratings are going up.
Strip naked and see who's the fascist.
Of course, this is way before TV cameras. I don't know how that would work.
But you understand the question I'm asking because, you know, Jay said he likes to watch it. I mean, what
no,
is it
I don't
about?
Like it. I love it. I'm hollering. I'm What's up this, hollering, waking the house up in the middle
of
the
night. Are human beings, are they born with competition? I mean, competing?
Competitive driving. Well, it almost has to be, don't you think, Zach? Because it's been around so long that, like you said, and even Paul used this illustration. Where is it, Jace? 1 Corinthians 9 or somewhere there?
Yeah, run the race.
Yeah, he talks about running the race and you know, you train for the race. And so he even used the idea of the games as
a... It's a safer competition than the
battlefield. And I don't think he was speaking of it as a negative thing, do y'all?
No.
I mean, not
in fact,
at all.
He said you go into strict training for a reason. But he did say, you don't want to live your life just going for a temporary crown, which in our case, we would say it was a gold medal. He said, you need to go for the big crown, which is the bigger one. But I do think it's in there, Dad. I think it's a...
Yeah, we do it once every 4 years. So that's about right.
Yep.
So every 4 years, I get up in front of the TV and I just enjoy the experience.
I mean, that kind of answered my question. I was wondering why you... But
because I'm a competitor.
The human race is. Think about it.
I like it. And it's good sportsmanship.
How much did you say they spent?
$2 billion on promoting it. But I didn't like that. Now just put it on my TV that's 2021 because I'm confused half the time what day it is already. Yeah. And now you're telling me, it's 2021, but let's act like it's 2020 because we spent a couple billion on marketing.
Jay,
I didn't like that.
Just so you'll know, you'll reach an age, and I'm speaking of myself, when you don't even know what year it is. See what I'm saying?
I do ask people that. That's why I send myself texts. I try to stay up on current events.
Well, no, but Jace, you're missing it. The Olympics are so big that they can go back in time. I mean, they've just taken us back to 20. We're living last summer and through these athletes. That's what's happening.
Well, right. I was going to say. When you go back in the history, one event I wish they'd bring back because in the early days, now I'm saying I think this was like in the early 1900s, they had tug of war. And to me, I would watch that. I mean, get about our 20 strongest Americans in a mud hole and let's just have a tug of war.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, we're sending rocks down and sweeping. I watched the fencing. That was another one I was hollering at. Some young girl, American. I mean, it was a tight, you know, they got the whole suits on and they got little swords.
Oh, yeah.
But they won't really hurt you.
They won't penetrate you.
When like the American poked the, because it was a Russian and American in the finals, hurt the person whose helmet lights up means you got there first, because now they got so much technology. You know, they just take off and they're stabbing each other in a non-graphic way. But it's exciting, you know what I mean? These two young girls got some weapons and some suits on.
See, in the old days, that was a life or death event.
So I'm into that. And so I was trying to research why the year. I actually thought they had run it last year and saved it. I thought they did this a year ago. And we're just now showing it. And I was like, well, how could that have not come out? Who won this stuff? So Missy saw me. She's like, what are you texting? I was like, well, I'm texting myself to research that. And she's like, babe, this is real. This is happening now. So we had this. Well, we actually had two arguments. Why do you text yourself? Because Missy doesn't do it.
Yep.
And I said, and that way it helps me remember, because as soon as I text myself, I forget that I'm texting myself. My phone will go off and I'll be like, who's texting me? I'm like, oh, that was me.
So you texting yourself was not to elevate yourself. It was just to give yourself some information you might want to get back to.
Yeah, I have hundreds of hundreds.
Your mother needs one of those. She needs to text herself every 5 minutes.
So look, here's like
it wouldn't do any good.
I texted myself a week ago. And I put, Missy said, are you seriously asking me something about ducks? And because I was going to tell you this story, I traded this property that I had in Austin. I just traded that to Nashville. It was a trade.
A trade?
Yeah. And this property
that had
in Nashville.
Only a stock market man that's got a truckload of money would speak like that. You know, I just traded, you know, a couple of $300,000-$400,000 house. I'm like, do what?
Well, if you sell it,
I got a little house down there, Jace. It's paid for, and I'm not trading it to anybody.
Well, if you sell it, you got to pay taxes on it. But if you trade it for a property worth the same thing, life goes on. The government says you can do that. So.
You need to work for the government to give them a little insight.
I would love to get involved if I could have any kind of authority.
I understand.
And make things right.
Dad, what would you trade your house for? What's of an equal value for your place down there?
You know, the we had to jack it up here last year because it had the front part of it was going down into the mud and the doors wouldn't shut. We'd scrape wood off the doors. It keeps sinking. And finally, we was working on them doors where they'd shut, you know. So finally, we called that good carpenter that Willie recommended, Gary. We called him in, and he jacked up the front portion and put another little foundation there. We live too close to the river, you know, floods coming in and out.
Which you actually welcome.
I welcome. Did I enjoy everything?
You know, Jason, it sounds like to me, I don't think Dad's going to get much for his trade. Hey, let's take a break. So the question is posed, how do you know when you're ready to do something about your receding hairline and bald spot? How do you know? Anybody have an answer for that question?
It's called running out of time.
Ask Phil what he thinks.
Time is not your friend when it comes to hair loss, tooth loss, belly's getting bigger. Time is not your friend. Time is your enemy. However, if you're a child of God, you say, thank God that immortality is waiting on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody runs out of time, is my point.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So our sponsors, Keeps, says you'll know this when that's the first thing you see in your mirror, which is actually pretty good. Yeah. That's when it's time to do something. So if you're losing your hair and you've noticed it, and you're more focused on the physical and not the spiritual at this moment, and you're trying to do something about it, Keeps is a great place to be able to do that. You go to their website. You're going to take, you know, they're going to guide you through the process about what you need. They ship it straight to your door. They can't give you hair back, but they can help you keep it. Go to keeps.com/door. You get 50% off your first order of hair loss treatments. That's keeps.com/door. Keeps.com/door, and hold on to that hair.
Well, in the real estate market, my son, he'll buy properties like yours, and the first thing he would do is rent a bulldozer. Yep. And he's then going to bulldoze that, build a nicer house, and then sell it.
Yeah.
So I hate to tell you that your house is going to fall into the bulldoze.
All I wanted to do, my goal, Jace, unlike yours, was to get a house. And at the time, it was 6 acres of land. It's as crazy as it sounds. And two houses were there for $29,000. That's what I got invested over there.
Yeah. Well, but Phil, that was 40, 50 years ago.
That's right. So I'm still there.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, but the good news is I don't owe anybody a dime.
True.
Yep. So you've gone.
Well, I don't.
Not my training of you.
I don't either. But yeah. So we just have bigger.
I didn't
bigger
think
number.
One of my sons would be trading houses. How many houses do you have, by the way?
I'm not sure.
Let's see. You have the one you live in. You had one down there in Austin, Texas.
Let me check.
Now you're talking Tennessee. Are there any more?
Check your text to find out how many houses you have.
Yeah, I'm checking my text to see. I don't know. But I'm trying to tell you that this last place I acquired has a little farm on it. And
well, that's a good.
Yeah. And they're moving and they got, you know, transferred or whatever their job
is. It a farm inside a subdivision or is it? So you're on
this out in the middle and this is in the woods.
And this is one in Tennessee?
Yeah.
You have deer in the yard.
Deer in the yard.
Oh, yeah.
And so they got a bunch of goats and they have chickens and they have ducks. And so what was amazing is they said the ducks lay more eggs than the chickens. Well, that's when I looked at Missy and I said, can you eat duck eggs? And she said, are you seriously asking me a question about ducks? I said, yes.
Well, what you can do with this, I'm just giving you a few ideas. Is it upstairs to the house?
Or is it upstairs?
Is there two stories? Two stories?
Yeah, there's two stories.
Well, there you go. So Burley told me a while ago was coming back from cutting beaver dams. Mm-hmm. He showed up for about a week, and I'm using him for heavy lifting. But he shows up, and he said that he killed 3 deer out his bedroom. He got a bedroom on the top. He's on the second story, got him a shooting lane out there in his yard, and it goes into some thick woods. And he's got a little feeder up there. The deer walk up. He shoots them and has fresh deer meat around the clock.
That will be the plan here because the woman who –
Your
wife,
upstairs bedroom will be your deer stand.
She said, exactly. I'm following. The woman said that she had to put a rule on her husband and sons that they could only shoot bigger deer because they were shooting them off the porch for food.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, I like –
Well, that's the strongest thing I've heard about housing. That's a good deal, eh, Jace?
Yeah, I think it is. So anyway.
Well, Jace, back to your duck egg question, I don't know if you're going to answer this, but there's a farm, a duck farm where they raise eggs that's about 45 minutes east of us there in West Monroe. And they raise duck eggs and they sell them to restaurants around town because apparently they're bigger and the yolk is bigger, so they do better, especially in baking. So stuff rises better. I mean, I've heard really good things about duck eggs. I don't know about just eating them straight up.
Missy did.
Well, I learned something today. I didn't know the ducks, because I've always said, as I now understand after I got through Al's speech, I've always said a duck is really good for nothing other than getting his feathers and having a feather pillar. Because the old women used to pick, they'd pick the duck, women all picked all the ducks back in the day in the 40s.
Or eating.
40s and 50s. So I'd watch the old women get together, and we all slept on mattresses that were made from duck feathers, pillows that were made from duck feathers. But I thought, and eating, that's the only thing they're good for. But we got number 3 now. Duck eggs, he said, are bigger. Baking, you're baking?
They said they actually have a richer flavor because then I went and Googled it, and I was like, what have I been missing here?
Duck has just gained worth in my mind, in the last 2 minutes.
So I'll give you one more, Dad. So
That's another good reason for shooting ducks, I guess.
a very popular item in restaurants now all across America are duck fat fries. So they take the fat because, and you know this from your dressing and stuff, the fat is much more dense. And so it makes, it fries better. Like they do these truffle fries and
it's
stuff like
that. It definitely makes
another.
The best dressing when you make duck and dressing. It's way better than chicken and dressing or turkey and dressing. Ducks have a better flavor mm-hmm. to their fat. Their fat's got a better flavor.
Yeah, speaking of duck fat fries, the first time I was introduced to that was your other son, Willie, had used that little concoction, and I was over at his house. But they also use goose feathers to make the birdie in my favorite Olympic game, which is badminton, to watch.
Huh.
Because Willie and I was on the badminton circuit for a while. Remember those days, Al?
Oh, yeah, I was too.
And it's one of the most fun games you can ever play.
So they have that in the Olympics too?
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. They're playing at a little higher level than Willie and I, but same concept.
I got you.
I mean, it's a, slam and wham.
Jace is right. So the reason I love it too, and I saw one the other day because I hadn't had a chance to watch a lot, but they had two Asian countries playing against each other. And, yep. You know, you're used to seeing, Jace, you look somebody, you know, you're making the burgers in the backyard and they got the badminton net set up and they're running around and it's, you know, you're watching that thinking, oh man. But then when you see real badminton, like we used to play and like what they're doing, where it's just moving all over the court and they hardly ever move. And that's the whole deal. I mean, you try to control the game from the middle of the court, but it was like watching us on steroids, you know, watching them play.
Well, I'm going to order some duck eggs. And
Well, don't order them. I got a bunch of ducks I've just acquired.
Are they laying?
Yeah. They said they lay more than the chicken. So I got the duck eggs.
So I'd like to have some duck eggs and let Miss Kay make her pound cakes and everything from duck eggs.
Well,
consider chicken eggs.
Consider it done.
Okay.
Have you guys had the duck liver? They force feed the duck and he gets obese and he has fatty liver disease. Then they take the liver, they mush it up into a paste.
A pate.
It's like a pate. It's a, what's it called? Foie gras?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a delicacy. That's a delicacy right there.
Well, I've eaten a lot of duck livers and hearts and, the hearts, what is it? The hearts.
This is making me nauseous.
Gizzard?
No, I don't. What?
The gizzard. The hearts, the gizzard. But I've never tried the liver, but that's a thought.
It's the liver mush. It's like a pate, foie gras.
You put it like you spread it on a cracker.
Yeah. I had it when we went to Normandy.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought it was strawberry butter. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's try this out. Yeah. If you think you're going in for strawberry butter and you get
it's a little different flavor than strawberry butter. I didn't care for it too much.
The Cajuns call it gigets, the gizzard, and but they always use them. You got to boil them to tender them, you know. But I always put usually that I have gizzards and hearts chopped small inside my gumbo.
See, I've always, you know, you brought up the Cajuns and calling it gigets. There's a lot of things I think that people eat that came right after huge consumptions of alcohol. And they said, hey, let's try that. Ain't bad. What are you going to cut? Jeez, hey. You know?
No, they were stone sober when they cooked these.
I don't know about that.
I mean, gizzards and hearts of a duck.
Why do you want to eat something where everything that goes in there is supposed to, I mean, that's an organ trying to siphon out all the bad stuff.
You know what most people don't know? If you know what you're doing when you're cleaning a duck gizzard, you can take off one side and the other side, because if you just cut it right half in two and open it up, a duck's gizzard is full of little rocks and sand.
That's my point.
And then you have to clean that off, of course. But I just take off and shave off barely missing that, and on the other side barely missing it, and throw that away. But a lot of them used to.
I still take the gizzard, throw it on a gravel road, and eat the rest of the duck.
No, a good duck gizzard is cooked right is good. I mean, Gidgets. I've made a many a duck dressing with Gidgets, Jace. You ate it as a boy. That's what gave you that energy and that insight.
Yep. I ate it as a boy that y'all forced me to eat. And now, as I'm older, when they say, here's some duck gizzards, I say, I think I'll pass.
Somebody said, well, why would you eat a bunch of ducks all the time? I said, because that's all we had.
I agree. If I was starving, I would eat a duck gizzard.
There you go.
But guess what? I'm not.
Hey, let's take another break. So I would say running a small business is hard. Would you say that's true, Dad? I mean,
no doubt.
We started with a small business. It's very difficult to do. We all have small businesses now. Zach has several. And it's tough. And one of the toughest things about them is human resources issue. And the reason why is because you have so many new things now. You got these termination suits, minimum wage, labor regulations. And now that we've got even bigger government, there's all sorts of stuff that has to be done. And it's not cheap. It costs a lot to have a dedicated manager. So one of our sponsors, Bambi, B-A-M-B-E-E, has a dedicated HR manager that can help you for $99 a month, and you can do it online. So you don't have to hire anybody, have them in your place.
That's a lot cheaper than a full-time HR director.
Much better. It's month to month. There's no hidden fees, and so they can really help you. If you go to Bambi.com/Robertson, right now you're going to get a free HR audit. That's Bambi.com, Bambee.com/Robertson, and get some help for your human resources needs. So you're saying, Jess, your palate now just says no to the old stuff, some of the stuff you were forced to eat. I get it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. All right, Romans 13. I brought up the Olympics because I think it's the most friendly that you can find when it comes to nations doing something and competing. But everybody, they're showing this common...
Yeah.
Their common sportsmanship. And you got to remember, the whole point of the book of Romans was that everybody, God's grace is for everybody.
Yeah.
And so I like when the world comes together and we show character in how we're competing. That's what excites me. I mean, part of it.
By the way,
also,
this is mentioned in 2 Timothy chapter 2 when he's saying, train people to know what they're doing, to train others. Endure hardship with us like a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No one serving as a soldier gets involved in civilian affairs. He wants to please his commanding officer. Similarly, if anyone competes as an athlete, which is what you're referring to with the Olympics, he does not receive the victor's crown unless he competes according to the rules, which is pretty cool. So he said the hardworking farmer should be the first to receive a share of the crops. But he just makes a point there that as far as athletes and soldiers, which is pretty cool.
I agree.
There would be more discipline in their life. Soldiers, they want to please their commanding officer. Athletes, they compete with the rules. No fudging. I mean, we want to see who's got what. So the Apostle Paul spoke of that kind of like you're doing today. You know, he liked it.
I think it's good, clean fun.
Well, I think part of the idea of the Olympics was kind of what you're talking about, Jace, because obviously in the old days, the ancient stuff was all just done within one culture, one country. And, you know, of course, the Greeks and the Romans had taken over a lot of other countries by warfare. But the games or the idea, at least the modern games, are that we can, even people that we may not have a great relationship with, we can still compete against. So the idea was try to make athletics, you know, have that bleed over into how people, you know, treat each other as countries. But, you know, it doesn't always work out that way. It's interesting because you look back at the Olympics in my lifetime, and the countries you wanted to beat the most were the ones you kind of had a bad relationship. You know,
the Russians.
The Russians in the U.S., you know, for 20 years during the Cold War, the Olympics were, everybody was like, we want to beat the Russians, you know? And I guess now it's kind of like that with the Chinese, you know, a little bit. So
some of these Sunday evening, you know, instead of watching the NFL, they went to the Coliseum and watched two men fight to the death with gladiators. You know, they got a little brutal with it, IJ. So you agree?
Well, I know, but we've pulled back from that, you know?
We tried to.
Now you can't hit the quarterback high and you can't hit him low, which they're almost saying you can't hit him. So
well, right. But I'm saying I would never watch these events in anything else in life. I mean, if I drove by and I saw five boats, you know, kayaks and people were rowing, and I'm not going to stop and watch. But you put USA on it and you put another country. I mean, let's see who the best in the world is. Well, I'm watching this and I'm cheering for my country.
Yeah, the New Zealanders strapped the United States here a few years back with their sailboating. You know, they had the New Zealanders beat America. They never did get over that.
Yeah, Jace, a lot of people were surprised that for 4 years, all these sports you see in the Olympics, they're playing them in the off years too,
yeah.
And they're even televising them. You know, but like, to your point, nobody's really tuning in to.
Nobody tunes in until it's country versus
nation. You put the country on the front.
Well, right.
I mean,
maybe the Olympics. Less, maybe the Olympics insert some type of conventional getting along. Let's just compete in sports with no wars and killing each other. I mean, you know, it would be a healthy thing for countries if they could get together and do that, I guess. What do you think, Zach?
Well, I think it values humans. You know, we live here. We're this let no debt remain outstanding, which we're going to get to in Romans 13:8, except the one to love one another. I mean, you love your neighbor. Don't do all
I know
these.
I know some of the listeners are going to send this in, so I'll just go ahead and bring it up for us to talk about. So, because a lot of people have kind of been turned off by the Olympics because there's been a few athletes that have, you know, like knelt during the anthem or turned their back, you know, on the flag and, you know, wore some stuff that was put on a T-shirt. And so a little of that has happened. I think it's not widespread, although, you know.
Yeah,
I hadn't
seen it.
I haven't seen except what's been reported. So
I
know a lot of people just
want to.
Right. A lot of people want to throw it out because that. But I kind of took the other take. I mean, I don't like that, obviously. But I thought most of those Americans that are over there love their country, love competing. So I hate to throw out the whole games because there's a few, in my opinion, a few bad actors and bad apples. So it's just another way to look at that. But I know there's going to be strong opinions about it in our, you know, our listeners. Because
well, there
some
is
people
something
like,
to be said about camaraderie. You know, they ought to consider that, I guess, among nations, camaraderie here. We can get together and behave.
No, I agree.
Well, and we'd rather not go to war, but sometimes there is war, which kind of is the lead-in, Jace. We had a question from a guy named Jared that's I don't know if he's still in the military or just was, but he'd been deployed several times, and he had been involved in several firefights, and in one of the cases took someone's life. You know, one of the combatants that we've been fighting against, I guess, in Afghanistan or somewhere in the Middle East, and you know, it obviously has bothered him. And so he asked us about it in lieu of the Ten Commandments. He said, you know, it says thou shalt not kill, which it actually says thou shalt not murder. But I want us to talk a little bit about that as we lead into Romans 13, because, Paul lays out, a case for following the authorities. And in there he mentions even the idea about bearing the sword. So what
you
would be
read
your take?
It? Let me just read. I mean, it says everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except that which God has established, which he was basically giving the Almighty credit for the idea of establishment that we have on the earth.
Yeah, call law and order.
The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from the fear of the one in authority? Then do what's right, and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good, but if you do wrong, be afraid. And you got to remember, I think he's speaking in generalities here. I mean, there are corrupt governments, and there always is this presence of good and evil. So he goes on to say, he is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoing. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. And then he even says, this is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time of governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If it's taxes, taxes, revenue, revenue. And then he comes down to, and says, let no debt remain outstanding except the debt to love one another. And then by the end of 13, he gives you a picture of what the greater motivation for us to be, which is to be like Jesus.
Yeah, what Jared needs to understand is...
Hang on, Dad. Let's take a break. Let's take a break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
I would say to Jared, I said, when the Japanese, for no reason, they had no reason, when they attacked Pearl Harbor and they were trying to expand their empire, they were a powerful, powerful nation at the time. So they attacked China, all their neighbors. They started conquering islands. They said, we need to get the United States out of the way. So let's take care of their fleet at Pearl Harbor. So about 3,000, I think, a little less than 3,000 died on that day. And that day will live in infamy, according to the President Roosevelt at the time. This day will live in infamy because we're coming back. So we declared war on Japan because they attacked us. Jared needs to understand that millions stepped forth and went to the Marine Corps, the Air Force, the Army, everybody. So everybody under one said, we're not going to let you do that, attack us for no reason. So when they all joined up, we lost hundreds of thousands during that process, 4, 5, 6 years. So World War II came and left, but all those guys, I went to Omaha Beach and I stood on that sand and looked how far it was to the edge of the bluff, and on top of the bluff, so all the Germans were dug in. That phase of the war, I was just hoping that they had a love for God and believed in Jesus Christ before they started out across that sand, that beach. So that's that. So the Twin Towers, Jared, we were attacked, two of our tallest buildings in the New York City, for crying out loud, and they ran jet loads of human beings into these buildings, and they did it with no reason. They just did it because they were trying to make a point, I guess. So they murdered all these citizens of ours. 3,000 died there. So Jared, the conflict you were into, you were there because the President of the United States, George Bush, said, the people who brought these towers down, they're going to be hearing from us. So Jared, you were one of the ones that joined up, but when you killed our enemy, just remember they're the ones that started it. And in my humble opinion, it was a righteous undertaking when you signed up, joined up, and you went into war against the enemy.
Well,
by my count, I think we won it. Now we're basically out of there now, and it's all ended, Iraq, Afghanistan, and all that. But I think it was worthy of note that they're the ones that started running airplanes into buildings, not us.
As Al mentioned at the beginning, you kind of briefly said it, but the verse doesn't say thou shalt not kill. It's thou shalt not murder. That's the Hebrew word is murder. And so a killing is not necessarily sinful unless it's murder. You know, if someone breaks into your house and, you know, they're going to rape and pillage, you know, your family and your belongings, you obviously defend your family, that, and you kill them in response. That's not, that's an honorable thing to do, not to protect your family. So I would tell Jared, first and foremost, because the email said, thou shalt not kill. I know it's actually, thou shalt not murder. And when I ran for U.S. Congress in 2014, I'll never forget one of the debates. One of my opponents, who was mayor of Monroe at the time, Jamie Mayo, he asked me, what would I do about ISIS? And I was like, well, I think there has to be a force and whatnot. And he brought that point up. He said, well, I thought you were a big Christian. Your Christian values on one side. Then he said, kill them on the other side. He said, then the Bible say thou shalt not kill. And I was like, no, the Bible says thou shalt not murder. And so there is a time for killing. Now, you know, I think that there's pacifists out there that might argue with us, and I would certainly respect their opinion. But I can see how they get there scripturally. But I don't see it. I think the scripture says that, and it's very clear in the Old Testament, at least Ten Commandments. And you see that Abraham was an example of somebody. You preached on Genesis 16 yesterday. Mm-hmm. What was it, Genesis 13, whenever Lot, was it 14, 13 or 14, when Lot was kidnapped?
Yep.
Abraham went in there who was a man of faith, the patriarch of our faith, and he killed a few people to get Lot back.
Brought him out to get him back.
Yeah. While you're there, Zach, you can tell Jared, Joshua, start there. Gideon, Samson, Jonathan, David, Elisha, Jehoshaphat, and all through the book of Deuteronomy. And Joshua, you say, God was leading the charge against these murderous nations that had popped up and were trying to kill the Israelites off. He protected them.
I think in Romans 13.
Hang on, Jason. Let's take our last break.
The verse before Romans 13, before we read, says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I mean, he had made the same reference in 12:9, where it said, love must be sincere, hate what is evil, cling to what is good. And then in chapter 13, when he made this point about rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong, you keep seeing this come up. And even at the end of 13, it says, this is verse 12, let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave decently. And then he lists things that are evil. In verse 14, it says, rather clothe yourselves with Jesus. And he also makes reference in the end of verse 12 about, let us put on the armor of light. And we have this spiritual application that Paul uses in Ephesians 6 about put on the armor of God. I read all that to say our primary focus is to point people to Jesus. Where's the passage in Corinthians says we don't fight, we don't wage war like the rest of the world. But there is an instance when it comes to the government and distinguishing between good and evil where we have to rise up and be a part of that.
I.e. David, who said there is a time for war.
All right. And you remember Jesus when he was given the illustrations of counting the cost in Luke 14. Remember when he said, suppose a king is fixed to go to war with another king, will he not first sit down? And I mean, Jesus himself was said there's a time where we're moving. This is evil, what you're doing. And for the greater good of our neighbor that you're oppressing or persecuting.
By far, loving each other where it doesn't come down to warring with each other is a far better idea, and it's a lot safer for a lot more people if you learn to love one another, love God, love our neighbor. It's a lot better than war, for sure.
And war should be a last resort, and it should be rare, but it's when the atrocity has reached a certain level where things are happening to fellow human beings that other people have to move in and say, no, we're not.
Man, that's a good point. You think about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I mean, that's really the place he got to, Jace, with Adolf Hitler. You know, Bonhoeffer's a Orthodox, preacher, a minister in the Lutheran Church in Germany, and he was very patient, trying to be faithful to the cause, faithful to the ministry. At some point in the history of Germany,
and that whole in the unfolding of the Holocaust, I mean, he thought it was worthwhile to try to attempt to assassinate Hitler, and I think he was justified. Do you?
Yeah, I do. And not only that, you mentioned Dad. You mentioned David. I mean, David is the perfect example, King David, because when he was young, I mean, he was just starting out.
Yep.
I mean, you see how God cares about soldiers when he basically gave him the wherewithal to take Goliath down. And look, that was a brutal situation. He killed him with that rock, and then he took that big old sword and cut his head off, and it said he took his head around and carried it around with him for about a month. You know, so I mean, all that, you read stuff like that in the Old Testament. Of course, a lot of people say, well, that's the Old Testament. But remember, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And we've already established that he was around the whole time, along with Yahweh, the Father, and along with the Spirit. So you look at the book of Judges, same thing. I mean, Samson was a killer. I mean, Samson killed a lot of people.
Yep.
You know, and he did it by the power of the Spirit of the Lord, according to the scripture. So I think the tenor of that, like Jace is right. We don't want to kill people. We don't want to have to defend ourselves. I'd rather nobody ever attack me. But the reason I carry a weapon around is in case somebody does. And yep. If they're after me or my family, I'd rather share Christ with them. But if they got menace in mind, then, you know, we're going to have to throw down. That's just the way it is. And that's
Would you agree with, as far as Jared is concerned, that his participation in the war against our enemies was justified? In my mind, he was justified.
Absolutely. I think so, too. And I think he'll be in heaven for eternity because he believes in Christ yep. and has agreed to follow him. So whether he kills someone in war or not.
But I do think it's... a testament to his character. I mean, that's a serious thing to take somebody's life. I can see how that would be a traumatic thing that he would probably continue to wrestle with. I mean, he might for the rest of his life, you know. And, right. and that's why when we talk about the sacrifice these guys make, it's not, I mean, some of them sacrifice their lives, but even taking somebody's life, it has to be quite the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because you got to carry that with you now. So, but I appreciate your service, Jared, if you're listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
To Jace's point, Jace, I'd a lot rather have a Bible study with my neighbors. No matter where they're from, what country they're from, I'd rather sit down, have a Bible study. We talk about God, talk about Jesus, introduce him. I would a lot rather that than some guy who breaks in your home or two or three of them, and they're there to rob, steal, and kill.
You think about it.
It's too late for a Bible study.
What causes war is evil behavior.
Yep.
And where people are looking at humans, not from a godly perspective. I mean, you think about, we mentioned Hitler and other wars. A lot of people just, they hate another race of people and they just want to do them harm.
Yep.
And they start doing all these things that are so atrocious that other people have to rise up and say no. But the greatest weapon we have to fight that is to change the heart, which is the message of Jesus. Through the grace of God and start looking at people from a godly perspective, which is what Romans is all about, is that Jew and Gentile can be saved.
Yep.
And Jew and Gentile includes everyone, every nation.
Which Paul made your point, Jason, in verse 3, he said, rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong, you know, that's where you get into the problem. So it's kind of like we talked about this, you know, last summer when we had all this stuff with the police and the Black Lives Matter. And of course, most of us just look at those situations and thought, man, if you'll just do the right thing, you really don't have to be fearful. Oh, it's just because you're white, whatever. But it really is true. I mean, the Bible is true about that. You know, people may be falsely accused. That's going to happen because they're evil. To your point, Jace, about sometimes having corrupt, you know, officials in government or police officers. There's going to be some of that, but then that's on them. That's their bad, you know.
Exactly. So even Jesus was crucified and he didn't do anything wrong. So, you know, you'd think, well, there's a contrast here. There's always going to be exceptions to the rule, but the overall rule is our main warfare should be spiritual, not physical.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why Romans 13 is honestly sitting in the middle of this book. It's almost like a, oh, by the way, kind of thing. I don't think it's the axis of the Christian faith for us to go out there and wage war. I think that's a function of government. I think God, the scripture gives governments that right, even whenever Jesus himself was crucified.
do you remember when Pilate said, "Do you not realize that I have the authority to kill you?" And Jesus is like, "Yeah, I realize that because it came from my Father." So even Jesus in that exchange is recognizing the right of government to impose these things. But I don't think it's the church should certainly not be. I don't think we should be going out there as the church in the name of Jesus. Let's go take down people and start wars. I think the church's role is to be kingdom people. And I think this whole passage is like, you be kingdom people and let the government do their stuff, and you guys submit to them because you got something else going on over here. This is your kingdom people, but submit to the government. You know, they're there for your good in general. I mean, there's obviously, this is even written in a time when the Roman government, I mean, you think about what was about to happen with Nero, and I mean, the government was not going to be for their good, but I think it was more, this is a contextual thing here to bring people back into a kingdom mindset.
Well, that's why he said the greatest weapon in verses 8 through 14 is love. You don't bring people together. You don't prevent wars. I mean, you sow the seed of love. That's why he said, clothe yourselves in verse 14 with the Lord Jesus and don't think about how to gratify the desires of the sinful nature. I mean, he's giving you an image of, I mean, it's like you're literally putting on Jesus as clothes, which reminded me of that Galatians 3:27, you know, it said all of us who were baptized into Christ have clothed themselves
one
with
of
Jesus.
A little interesting points here. Jesus in Luke chapter 11, about verse 21, when a strong man, fully armed, guards his own house, his possessions are safe. But when someone stronger attacks and overpowers him, he takes away the armor in which the man trusted and divides up the spoils. So there is something to be said with that particular text. You see what I'm saying, Al?
Yep, that's exactly right. So, and you see that quite a bit. And to Zach's point, as we wrap up here, I think that's why we wouldn't be supportive of the Crusades, you know, that went on, because that was the idea. If you can't convert them, then you kill them. But I mean, God didn't treat us that way.
No.
So I don't think that's the way the church, we should do respond either. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit more when we get back to Romans 13 into 14 next time.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.